Howdy. Thanks for joining us again for another great edition of Talking Tigs. I'm Scott Girard. Joining me as always, Tommy Johnson, Daniel Zollinger. Got another good one for you this week. Might be a quick one too. We do have some men's and women's basketball scores to update you on, as well as baseball. They had a okay week, I guess. Didn't end the weekend did not end well. It was not a good rematch of the National Championship Series. But I think we can look forward and positive. We can talk about that, as well as anything else that comes down the chute. But before we do, I want to check in with the co-hosts, see how you guys are doing. Hope you had a great weekend and your brackets are completely busted now. I'm sure they are. Mine are. We can talk specifically about who did us in. But I don't know. I imagine Oakland was a spoiler for a lot of people. But man, a lot of good games so far. Some good overtime ones too. But we could talk about all that. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good to be with you. Good to be talking about, you know, LSU sports, even though kind of a tough week for LSU in general. So, but we'll get it done.
Yeah, doing well. We're in the mix of the March Madness now. Like you said, there's been some fun games, close ones. It's been pretty chalky overall. Not too many Cinderella runs at this point. I think Yale and Grand Canyon are still alive as we speak, but it's only the second round. There's no 16 over ones or 15 over twos like that. But we'll see who takes it down in the end. The power players, UConn, Purdue, Houston, all looking good in the early stages. And then over on the women's side, LSU had two close games, but thankfully they won both. So they're on to the Sweet 16 in this upcoming weekend. So that's a bright spot for the sporting department here on Talking Tigs.
Indeed it is. Definitely want to, something we didn't really, I don't think we really need to dive too deep in that is the men's basketball had a game earlier in the week. And it was scheduled that way for a reason, because we knew the Tigers were probably going to show out against North Texas. We showed our ass. I don't know if we can say that on Talking Tigs Radio, but man, Tigers could not pull one out at home. They had the comforts of the PMAC, the Palace, but they just could not get it done. And it wasn't even close. It wasn't like they lost on some fluke play at the end. Man, the Tigers just were down for most of the game, I would say, at different levels. But the Mac McMahon era, at least, you know, year two is in the books. I will say this, the genius behind his decision to submarine his last few games, but still beating two top 15 opponents in South Carolina and Kentucky so that he can set himself up good for next year with low expectations so his team can overachieve, I think is genius on Mac McMahon's part. Of course, we would have wanted to see a win against North Texas, but I think I can see his long game here. But, I welcome you guys' comments.
Yes, I think you're spot on, Scott. It has to be all part of a grand plan that is – Scott Woodward is totally in on, and it's really just like setting us up for a huge season next year. So I'm totally in favor,
right?
But actually, in actuality, I feel like the Matt McMahon era may need to come to an end.
Well, it's a weird way to end the season on kind of a strange footnote, losing at home to North Texas in the round one of the NIT. At that point, it's kind of like, why did you even show up? It would have been better just to stay at home and not play. There had been some hopes, I think, among us and some other people that although the NIT isn't exactly glamorous, that maybe we make a run at it. That there's a foothold to build off for next season, but that's not really how it worked out. And it's pretty much back to the drawing board. I think with the improvements that we made over last year's horrific outing, then McMahon has earned himself a year three, but not much more than that. And then next year kind of be like put up or shut up. I think if we are at the same level or regress even further, then that'll be about it. But otherwise, he'll have to compete, I think, for probably a top four spot in the SEC to keep the train moving forward on his tenure in Baton Rouge. Otherwise, then we'll be back to square one in the coaching search again, which we've done quite a few times on Talking Tigs here across various sports. But It is what it is. We didn't expect that much from the season, and we didn't get that much. So wish that we would have gotten more entertaining output, but there's always football.
One thing I do want to mention, or maybe devil's advocate, I mean, who gets really excited about the NIT? Nobody does. So you come out flat, you know, it's nobody really wants to be there in the first place. You know, maybe that had something to do with it. I don't necessarily think this team deserves to come out flat. Like, it's not like they were on the bubble and, you know, like first four in, first four out or whatever. Like, they were clearly not going to the tournament. I think everyone kind of knew that from the beginning. They're, you know, it's not a Florida State situation or something like that, but Florida State in the bowl game. But maybe that has something to do with it. But either way, it was kind of an embarrassing loss.
Sure.
On our own court.
I wouldn't give that as an excuse. But it's clear that if he'd have made a Johnny Jones decision like back in the day and just said, you know what, we didn't even want the NIT at this point because we're just so up and down, inconsistent. At least they were. Yeah, I think it would have been okay if we didn't accept. But I think that's the issue, is just the inconsistency, because you can't be two top 15 teams within a matter of like the same week. And then, like, you lose inexplicably to Arkansas, who didn't make, I don't think, any tournament. And then you still have trouble with Missouri in your last home game of the season. You know, didn't really do anything in the SEC tournament. So at home against North Texas, you're thinking at best, or at worst, I guess, you know, probably a 6-point, 8-point home win. But no, it wasn't even competitive, really.
Yeah, it really wasn't. But you know, this was an off year for basketball from start to finish. There were very few highlights. So it's probably best just to chalk that one and move on to next year.
Absolutely, which we will. We'll keep track of that. Now, LSU women, of course, different story. They are very much still alive. Like Daniel said earlier, they had two wins this week, probably closer than we had expected. Well, I don't know. I guess MTSU, it was close for the – well, they were leading at halftime. Tigers end up walking away with it with no issues. But, yeah, I'd say Kim Mulkey is definitely a woman on a mission, because she gave a fiery speech to get her team ready. Well, excuse me, not to get the team ready. She gave a fiery speech to get – the media ready for some some story that's going on with the Washington Post that supposedly is going to be released but hasn't been released yet. Like, that was the, you know, normally you don't really talk about politics, but that's like she put that one front and center. So you got to talk about it. I guess kudos to her for trying to get out in front of it. I don't know what it is, because we still haven't seen it yet, but she's already letting people know. You know, I'll come for you if you don't come correct. And this is nothing to do with the – well, we don't even know what it has to do with. I don't think it has anything to do with the Tigers' current situation, maybe just how she treats players, or I don't know, maybe something she did on a mission trip. Who knows? But she felt strongly enough about it to give a press conference a couple days ago coming out of this thing, so – I don't know. I still haven't seen the story or any inkling of what it would be about. What do you make of her coming so full force in front of this, even before they'd already played a game, but, you know, like in the midst of the tournament?
Yeah, it was very weird. You know, seeing that I watched the clip you were talking about of her conference, and, you know, she's going after the media, talking about the Washington Post is calling up former players and asking, you know, saying, oh, you can give me anonymous. If you have dirt on Kim Mulkey, like, you can give me an anonymous tip or whatever. You know, we won't quote you. It's off the record kind of thing. And we'll put it, or it's, I guess it is on the record, but it's anonymous anyways. So obviously she doesn't like that. She said that, I think, well, I don't know exactly how she said it, but she was like, you know, they've called a couple people, but, you know, they haven't called the other countless girls that I've coached over the years who've been very, you know, who been very successful and have enjoyed their time or whatever. But I would imagine it, I mean, she hasn't really had enough time at LSU to you would think, to build up some sort of, you know, caseload of bad experiences. So it's probably going to be a lot of people from Baylor. But yeah, she said that she's hired like the best defamation or libel attorneys in the country, and she's going to sue them if and when it comes out of it. So kind of interesting. Probably not, you know, what you want to be dealing with during the tournament when you're trying to defend a national championship, but yeah, that's how it's going.
Right. I mean, it seems almost strategically timed that with the announcement of it coming right before LSU was supposed to play our first round game against Rice. And it's a little bit weird too, that it even became such a story before there is a story. Like, wouldn't the author have tried to keep it kind of hushed up and get his sources like completely quiet, or did somebody on the inside leak?
I think that's Kim Mulkey doing it.
Well,
like, I interpreted it is the author is calling, is just got a list of players, going down the list, calling players, and, you know, basically called one of the wrong players who actually likes Kim Mulkey, said, hey, and so that he says, hey, if you want to be anonymous and give me some dirt, we'll do it. And then, you know, they hang up the phone and call Kim and say, hey, I just got this call, get ready, like, the story's coming. I think that's how it happened.
That makes sense. And it's also understandable that Kim Mulkey obviously wants to stand up and defend herself and her players before it even comes out and say, oh, there's nothing really here. But maybe there's an inkling of something, considering kind of the severity of her response. And then, because sometimes these things will happen, like, oh, it's no big deal. Like, you kind of just dismiss it. But this is something seems completely different. And then they're willing to go to battle over this. I guess we'll find out when the story actually drops, if it ever does. Maybe the guy backs off now that Kim Mulkey's stood her ground, and she seems to have at least a fair amount of support from former players and assistants and all that. And hopefully the university will back her as well. I just don't want this to turn into another Will Wade situation where it's USA Today every 6 months dropping the latest hit piece. And it's like a never ending series of like dirt that takes 3 years to drag out the litigation on. But I think we'll be all right as long as the players can stay focused going into the Sweet 16 and beyond. Maybe they can even use it as a rallying point around Kim Mulkey if they like her that much and they're going to play for her in this case. And we'll see if that can motivate them any more. But yeah, strange, and hopefully not too much of a distraction for the players.
What if this is just like a 40 chess move from Kim Mulkey to create a fake story,
a false flag operation
to get an LSU women's team that you could see it today. You saw it, I think, in the first game against Rice. They're very good, very talented, but they're not dominant. And, you know, they're playing against they're on the other side of the bracket from a South Carolina team that didn't they beat their opponent by like 40 points today?
Yeah. They beat North Carolina by almost 50. So yeah, that's something. And LSU is going to have to play the winner of UCLA versus Creighton in the Sweet 16. And if we manage to get past that, most likely Caitlin Clark and Iowa in the Elite Eight. So that'll be the national championship rematch. So now is not the time to slow down or take your foot off the pedal, especially since we haven't played maybe our best basketball in the last two games.
Yep. Yeah. So genius move again by Kim Mulkey here. Just ultimate motivator, like Nick Saban level psychological motivation here. You got to give it to her.
Some rat poison.
yeah,
right. Rat poison. Rat poison, exactly. So, I mean, they ended up winning, 53-56 against MTSU. So, great. Great way to finish out the week. Once again, the women holding the jock, so to speak, for basketball this year. We'll follow as they continue on in the tournament. Men, of course, are out. I mean, it's the NIT, yes. But still, we probably could have shown better. I'll say this, though. SEC as a whole has not been represented well in any of the tournaments. I mean, Georgia's still going in the NIT. There's a couple teams going in the NCAA tournament, but Auburn getting upset. I mean, Tennessee looks kind of like the part. You know, Mississippi State's gone. They lost to Michigan State. Dude, we just, you know, it's Florida's out. They lost one they probably should have won. So obviously upsets are part of the tournament, but SEC is not having a good year, wouldn't you say?
No, yeah. And this was one where the hopes were pretty high, considering they had so many teams make the tournament, and the quality of basketball seemed to be pretty good the whole year round. But yeah, Auburn losing that first game to Yale at the very end, and Auburn coming off just winning the SEC championship, so that was a disappointment for people who aren't in the Ivy League. Texas A&M is still alive, but they have to play Houston tonight, so that could go poorly. And then Alabama's battling with, Grand Canyon as we speak. So hopefully they'll dispose of them. But yeah, Tennessee is the only team to secure their Sweet 16 berth at this point. And it's those other teams, the number ones, like I said, UConn and Houston and Purdue, UNC, that are still looking pretty solid.
Yep. I would say a lot of other, like, really good games going, like the one with North Carolina State in Oakland. That was a good one. Went into overtime. Very good game. So there was another one. Tennessee and Texas was pretty good too. There was another one, like one of the, some of the upstarts went into overtime as well. That was a really good game. Went down to the wire. Creighton in Oakland. I'm sorry. So a lot of good games. Definitely foot the bill. I don't think anyone's got a perfect bracket as of right now, right? I was going to ask.
Not even close.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
I know. Mine was good for like the first 5-6 games and then just kind of went downhill. The Oakland-Kentucky game, that was probably that's the one you expected. There's been a lot of 12-5 upsets, which are usual, but there's like several instead of just one or two. But Oakland, did you hear any buzz about them before the tournament? Because I was able to hear about them beforehand because they have these crazy foul line antics that they do in their home court. Did you guys ever see any about that?
I didn't see it. No.
No. So they had some notoriety, at least their fans did, for when opposing teams were at the foul line, the student body was doing crazy things right behind the goal to try and distract them. Looked like it worked. They were doing stuff like, guys were like, I don't know if it was fraternities or what, but guys were shaving their heads while the guy
live.
Yes. While he was shooting one, they were like, I don't know, like popping a pimple with like a big magnifier. I don't know. They're doing all kinds of weird stuff trying to distract them. And oh, wow. It was great. One was a tattoo. They're getting tattoos live while the guy was shooting a free throw.
Oh my God.
Crazy. I'm like, Oakland.
Dedication to your craft.
Exactly. Your support. And I'm thinking Oakland, California. Oh, heck yeah. That makes sense. No, it was Oakland, Michigan. Out in the middle of nowhere, wherever it was. So I thought that was awesome. And these guys, now had they won against Creighton, they'd have been in the Sweet 16. And who knows, maybe we would have seen some of this in the tournaments, yeah. But alas, we will not. But anyway, I just didn't know if y'all had heard about the story behind this team before the tournament.
No, not before.
Okay, yeah, check honestly, it out. They did some crazy stuff.
The first I'd really heard of them was when they beat Kentucky.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that game. They had the one guy who made, I think, 10 threes, and he doesn't shoot like a single two-pointer. And then there was bets in the game against NC State in the second round. It was like, will he shoot a single two-pointer? And it was like, yes, was like plus 600. It's like 6-1 odds that he's going to shoot a single one, and he didn't shoot a single two-pointer the whole game. And people found out that he had shot only 8 two-pointers the entire season, and he had made like 150 threes or something like that. So just the pure sharp shooter.
Is that the guy who at the end was like, we ain't no Cinderella?
Yeah, Golkey, I think is his name. And he made 6 threes in the second game, which is not as many as the 10 in the round one, but unfortunately wasn't enough to beat NC State in overtime, who's on a tear winning the ACC tournament. Now they're in
very good
Sweet 16 against Marquette.
Yeah, I'd have put some money if I was thinking back at who had some buzz before. NC State was hot. So is Texas A&M too, who, like you said, they're still playing. They're still alive. One of only a couple probably at this point. I think Alabama might still be alive, right? But
they're playing right now.
Yeah, that's right. You said that. But yeah, Texas A&M and NC State would be some bracket busters. But yeah, man, good stuff all around. And the thing about Kentucky, the stat that popped up is they've only won one game in like their last four tournament appearances. And that's just...
Yeah, the Calipari method seems to have kind of fallen off, where it's now almost more veteran leadership and experience. It's winning and taking deep in the tournament. His slate of five new guys every year, most of them freshmen, can't seem to get the job done. And I mean, his kind of goal is to promote Kentucky as like an NBA factory, and that's what brings in the five-star recruits the next year. But if I was an athletic director, my number one goal would be to win a national championship, and maybe his schemes aren't exactly fit for that in the modern game of college basketball, at least not professional basketball.
Yep. Right. Calipari shine is kind of, it's really wearing off.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's, everyone's doing it now. I mean, if you can join a mid-major program and make it deep into the tournament and get the same exposure, why not? You know, maybe we'll take home some conference championships along the way. Because Kentucky hasn't, I mean, not compared to what they should have been doing, should be doing. But anyway, moving on to baseball. I mean, I'd love to talk about softball because the Lady Tigers are still doing amazing. They still trucking on, still yet to be defeated, right?
No, they lost a couple of this week.
Lost. Yeah.
Oh, they did. Okay. Yeah. So they finally lost one. Fine. But they at least won this week. Baseball, like we said earlier, they did okay. They batted 500 for the week, but that included a midweek game against La Tech. They run-ruled them. What was it, 11-1 or 12-1? So LSU looked great there. They looked really good for the first game against Florida. Pulled away with a 6-1 win. Luke Holman set a career record for strikeouts, had 13. Looks great. I mean, he only gave up, I think, that one home run.
Yeah, he was dealing.
Yeah, and Tigers looked the part. Second game was it was more competitive. It was pretty close until late. Actually, went late. The game did. But Florida pulled out a win. But, man, today in the rubber match, the Tigers just completely crapped the bed. They lost 12-2, got run rolled. Second time in, you know, as many weekends, we lose a series and we get run rolled in the third game. So, definitely not last year's team. We knew that, but man, definitely have to taper our expectations from this point on, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we talked about it last week, the Mississippi State loss on the road, or series loss on the road is was a disappointing one, but you could chalk that up to, hey, it's first, you know, it's a young team, first SEC series again on the road, hostile environment, da, da, da. I think last night's loss, the extra innings, I mean, that's two good teams going at it. And, you know, what it went to was it the 10th inning?
Yeah, 11th when we lost.
11th, yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, and I it was on like a 2-run homer, I think. So you can't, I mean, I'm not as mad about that one, but this 12-2 loss today, it's just bad. We're just bad. We just don't have, again, and I mean, it's been our thing. It was a bit of an issue last year. We obviously squared it away for Omaha, but pitching in, you know, gosh, we haven't had a really deep, solid pitching staff in a long time. And we definitely don't have one now. Thatcher Hurd, again, maybe this will be just like Kim Mulkey, you know, with her strategies of planning a story, and Matt McMahon of his strategy of losing at the end of the season so it looks better next season. Maybe this is Thatcher Hurd's strategy of being bad and saving all of his good pitches for the end of the season, because it's kind of what he seemed like he did last year.
And it worked.
And it worked. So I hope that's what he's doing. But as of right now, he does not seem like a real – solid starter for us. And then especially when we go into extra innings last night, you know, go 11, kind of exhaust our bullpen between Friday and Saturday, I feel like Jay was, you know, really kind of, we were in that game the whole time. So, you know, trying to bank on winning that game and win the series, get out of there with a win. By today, it seemed like our pitchers were just kind of out of gas. And, you know, Thatcher went, he went four innings. I think that's right. Yeah, he went four innings. And then you had Anderson, Coleman, and Little go in, which we've talked about Christian Little. Javon Coleman is decent, but I mean, Thatcher gave up five runs, then Anderson gave up three, Coleman gave up three, and then Christian Little finished it off with one. You know, just not a good performance. And again, and I think, I mean, not just to put it all on the pitchers, but we didn't have any real run support to not that. I mean, it's hard to it's hard to say like, oh, we need 12 to 15 runs every game in order to be competitive. I mean, that's not fair to our offense, but on a night when, or on a day when we had, you know, we didn't have our best stuff pitching wise, you know, two runs from what's supposed to be an elite LSU offense is not fantastic.
Right.
The shortcomings of this team compared to our national championship winning team of last year becoming more and more clear, especially over the last 2 weeks, because last year we had Paul Skeens, who was basically 95% guaranteed win on Friday.
He's unstoppable.
And then Saturday was Ty Floyd kind of plus one other, who was actually very efficient and for the most part effective, because we didn't,
he'd give you like four or five really good innings,
because we didn't sweep every series, but we would usually win Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday was kind of just all hands on deck and hopefully win that one. That's why we ended up winning a lot of series 2-1, because we would win Friday and Saturday and lose Sunday.
Yep.
This year we've got Luke Holman, who's very good on Friday, so I would say that one's definitely a plus matchup and gives you probably 70 to 75% chance to win even, which we saw on Friday when we held him to one run. And then after that, Gage Jump did a pretty good job on Saturday. He held him to two runs over, I think, six innings, which you can't ask for too much more than that. Yeah. But then after that, it's kind of like the everybody else situation where we don't have a great stopper or a guy to kind of put in a high-pressure jam and get us out of it, or maybe deal like two innings and get us to the very end like we had last year. I guess that the guy last year was kind of Riley Cooper, who wasn't amazing, but he usually did a pretty good job at that. And we don't really have that kind of middle reliever. And then on the offensive side, there's definitely some pop and some power to this offense. We had a fair number of home runs, but an issue that we're seeing is it's a lot of solo homers. Like in the Saturday game, we had three solo home runs by Travinsky, Jared Jones, and I think Mac Bingham. But it's like, where are our base runners? Those solos need to turn into two or three run shots. We're not hitting for average very well, which is what's supposed to be Jay Johnson is known for, coming from Arizona. And we definitely saw that last year. But we had that core of Trey Morgan, Dylan Cruz, Tommy White, and then Braden Joubert pretty much 1-4, where it was almost like an on-base and power factory every time the lineup cycled. So we were okay with a little bit of lack of production towards the end of the run. This time we have some of that home run power still, but we're not hitting for average. And so we can't kind of turn the lineup over so often and wear down their pitching. And instead we're just hoping that we maybe get a walk and somebody blasts a home run and it takes us over the edge. So I don't really know what the fix is for that. It's some time in the cage maybe, but if our pitching is going to continue like we are now, the offense definitely needs to step up and play like we know that they're able to. I know it's kind of a long rant, but that's just what I saw from this weekend. Defense was better, at least. We didn't have any errors across three games, which we saw during Mississippi State. Especially Tommy White has been a very bright spot at defense, which was his weakness last year.
Yeah, he's playing very well. Mm-hmm. Man, do you know that Paxton Kling is batting 200?
It seems worse than that, but yeah. He's been rough. And even Steven Milam, who had a hot start, he was like 3-30 or something over his last bit. And I think he got pulled in the game today for not being able to swing the stick as much.
The overall, I mean, I guess this is, I'm just looking at the team stats. This is overall though. So, I mean, it's probably padded by the very beginning of the season, but I mean, other than Kling, everyone's batting over 250. All of our starters, I should say.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, I would be interested to see like maybe last six, you know, last 10 games or something like that.
Yeah. And well, I think one can play towards the other, right? Because yeah, Thatcher Hurd did give up 5 runs, but it's like he waited 4 innings to do it. It's like who knows if he'd had some run support to start the game, because LSU's offense, it's like, yeah, we did 6 runs. We did a little bit less the next game. But, you know, we didn't have Luke Holman throwing 13 strikeouts on Sunday. So it's like that the offense definitely has to step up. And you can tell Jake Johnson is still tinkering with the lineup. You know, I think he had Mac Bingham batting leadoff this weekend too. So it's he's still trying to find what he was doing that all last season. It was constantly in flux. So I would like to think he just has to find that right coordination, that right lineup, and maybe the offense is not going to be starving for runs as they were here today.
Well, Tommy, to give you some context on the stats, I'm looking at the total stats for all the SEC teams, and through this year, LSU as a team is hitting .291, which is right in the middle of the pack. That's number 7 in the SEC, number 1 being Alabama at .325. So it's not terrible, but I wouldn't say that's great as a team. And another one that jumps out to me, which I'm pretty surprised about, is we have 35 home runs, which is towards the bottom of the league. The high point of that being Georgia with 74 home runs, which is kind of insane. But we have less than half the amount of home runs as Georgia, so we're not even necessarily making up for it that much in power. So I'm sure Jay Johnson will be emphasizing that going forward.
Yeah. Man, I wonder, did Georgia just start off their season like playing Dixie youth teams or something?
I don't know. I did see that one guy on the team, Charlie Condon, I think already has like 22 home runs or something by himself, which is like, it was wild. Like, who gave him the juice?
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Man. Also, I don't know if you heard this during the broadcast. I think it was on the Friday game. Did you hear him talking about how the bats, like now the BB Corps bats are too hot?
Yeah, and Ben McDonald's like they need to tone down the offense in college baseball, and then the bat manufacturers have kind of worked around the restrictions.
They found out how to make them hotter than they were before, which I'm like, wow, that's – I wish I could have swung those, because when I was playing, the BB Corps bats had just come in, and they were all dead, and it was terrible. But anyways, that's
nothing. Sure. I don't know. I'd be interesting to – maybe we can reach out to Marucci, since that's an LSU guy, and you know they make bats, obviously. The team and other teams use them. But I don't think there wasn't really any football news that came out, which as we've decided earlier, can be a good thing. But there wasn't any, I mean, there was open practice, there was some interviews, there was plenty of video. A lot of guys saying good things about Blake Baker being the defensive coordinator. One thing that's kind of stood out to me is just the vibe from them is that he's bringing some new energy. And when you think about it, LSU has always looked for that seasoned veteran, that guy. We're looking for like our next, I'm not going to say Bo Pelini, but that's, but you know, like John Chavis or somebody like that, just somebody that had good defenses back in the day. But, you know, we are always looking for that older name. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just need somebody young that can motivate the guys to give you the performance you need. And that's what I think Blake Baker would bring, is some youthful energy.
Yeah.
Kind of LSU hasn't had in, I don't know. I don't know when they've had like a younger defensive coordinator. It's probably been a while, right? Like Joe Brady, you could say, was maybe some youthful offensive energy, although he wasn't necessarily a coordinator, but still having a youthful guy as your coordinator. I don't know. I think LSU hasn't had that in a while. It could be good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that I'm hearing the same thing. The other interesting thing I've heard, and this is, you know, I'll be really interested to see how Harold Perkins plays throughout this year, because Blake Baker, I believe, was one of the main ones who recruited him as a linebacker coach while he was here, and then, you know, kind of, and then utilized him really well. I think in the first season he was here. and then, you know, then left. Well, I do wonder. The rumor is, or not really rumor, I guess it's confirmed because it was at practice. But at practice, they've been using him as an inside linebacker again, which we saw last year was not successful. People, you know, were revolting on Tiger droppings. And I mean, we talked about it on this podcast, you know, is it the best place for him? Is it? And but again, but it appears he's back at inside linebacker. Is Blake Baker going to be able to adjust and you know, maybe coach him up better or put him in better positions to succeed and use that talent? Because last year when he was playing inside linebacker, it seems like he just got caught in the traffic and couldn't really do anything, was really just taking on blocks the whole time, which is not, you know, where he's best utilized. That's something I'm interested in seeing kind of as we go through spring and then going into fall.
Yeah, and on the Harold Perkins note, you hear about the contract year play in the NFL where, like, a guy will do better in his last year of his contract because he wants to put up big numbers and earn himself a big contract for the upcoming year when he has to renew. It's almost like that for Harold Perkins, where in his true freshman year, he kind of popped out. He was a five-star recruit, and he was living up to the hype, making big sacks, and then there was all the hype surrounding him going into year two last year, in which I would say he played solid, but he wasn't exactly lighting it up. And in the kind of way too early draft boards after his freshman year, he's like, oh, this is a top five pick, like LSU's next great defensive player. And I was like, all right, he's good, but is he worth that? And so year three going into the NFL next year is like, all right, time to produce, time to record some sacks, tackles for loss, pass breakups, all of that. And it is, of course, a little bit scheme dependent on the coordinator, how well they utilize him, but hopefully he's able to kind of channel that energy and put up big numbers as well, and really also be a veteran leader for this defense where we need that emphasis from his play as well.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. I got the spring game rapidly approaching, of course. I imagine it'll be free to the fans, as it usually is.
Yep.
We'll see how the parking goes, as always. But lots to be look forward to there. Now, that was about it. Although as a little tidbit, since it is football news, since we kind of all met during a brief stint as Saints reporters or otherwise. Which kind of spawned a LSU podcast. A little bit of Saints news. They got Chase Young, which, you know, of course, we were talking about back in the day when right before he was going to get drafted, if it would be him or Joe Burrow or what. But he's coming to the Saints. A lot of excitement there. A lot of good. I mean, the Saints, I thought, had a fairly good defense. That's been a strong point for years. I'd say the defensive line could definitely use a jolt like Chase Young, but I don't know. I still think like there's still something missing on offense, you know, kind of like the early years of the Drew Brees, man. There's sometimes the best defense is a good offense. So I think they could definitely address that, but still I'd say a big pickup for the Saints.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting one. It's always kind of cool when you see, like, I mean, same thing, like when they signed Tyrann Mathieu, like you see when you sign somebody who you have kind of like a connection to a memory of, because a lot of times in the NFL,
he was on the Heisman stage with Joe Burrow.
He was, yeah. People, I mean, there was if you remember, there was a fierce campaign of he deserved it more than Joe. Joel Klatt was like the number one Chase Young, you know, leader saying no, forget Burrow, it's Chase Young. But obviously they selected the right way. But
obviously
it's kind of I think it's kind of cool. Like the interesting thing about the NFL is like a lot of times, you know, the kind of the big stars you follow in college, like they're you know, how many of them actually end up being like longtime NFL players? Like not a ton of them. You know, a lot of times the NFL teams are made up of just kind of grinder kind of everyday guys, or not everyday, but more, you know, kind of guys from all over different schools across college football. So it's cool to see that. I'll be excited to see him play. And you're right, like I think that the one thing this defense definitely needs is a little bit of youth. Especially on the defensive line, you know, Cam is great, but he's just, you know, he's getting up there.
Good thing that he's a forever young, you may say.
That is true.
Fair enough. Well, I don't know. I think that was probably all we had to talk about, unless you guys had something else.
Only two minor notes real quick. We neglected to mention on the baseball this week's schedule, Tuesday at home versus Southeastern, who we squeaked by in Hammond earlier in the season. And then we're going at Arkansas, number one Arkansas, to Fayetteville this weekend. So that's going to be a tough series to follow up, but definitely a chance to redeem ourselves after Florida. And of note in that one is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. So Thursday night it is first pitch. And so go Tigers there. And then the second note was that LSU Gymnastics won the SEC championship. So that was pretty cool. And so they'll be a number one seed going to the national tournament. So some success, at least, in that department.
Yeah. I'm still naive to think enough to think that LSU could take two out of three from Arkansas. But if they don't, do you think that would be like a, okay, it's time to admit we have taken a serious plateau step down from last year? Because that would have been three straight SEC series in a row that we have just lost.
Maybe is it time to make a coaching change? Is it time to put Jay Johnson on the hot seat?
Yeah, I mean, losing the series to Arkansas, it wouldn't be disastrous because you're playing at their field, which is one of the most hostile in college baseball, and they're obviously the number one team. I think if we get swept, then there's a little bit of distress, but if we can at least take one and hopefully two, then there's not too much reason to cry, but we'll be able to break that down next week.
Yeah, I'd say if we at least take one, and God forbid we lose two out of three, as long as one of them's close, right? Like if we get run rule two games and then we just win a pitcher's duel like 2-1, I'm not going to feel good about it. But if one comes down to like, against Florida, it's extra innings and they just happen to eke it out and we could have won another, it could have gone either way, but they won it, I'll be okay with that. I can at least put it in perspective for the rest of the season. Cause again, Jay Johnson's still looking for that magic formula, which I know Scott Woodward would say he will find, and I, got to trust in Scott always. So that's what I'm gonna go with. I did want to mention one last thing before we head out, and we got to give credit where credit's due. And that is to the LSU gymnastics team, who secured their fifth conference title last night. And they did it in the Smoothing King Center, actually, as they won the SEC championship. They're ranked number three. They did it with a score of 198.075. If that score doesn't really make any sense to you, that's okay. That's the score that they won with. That's all that matters because they're SEC championships. And congrats to the Lady Tiger gymnastics team and Jay Clark, the head coach. A lot of good teams with the SEC, and just wanted to give credit to the Tigers for winning the SEC. Obviously, there's some national tournaments to go. I don't know if it's a field of 64 like basketball, but I imagine the Lady Tigers will be in it to win it, and we'll have some news for you there as well. Go ahead, guys. Spit your gymnastics hot takes.
Go Tigers.
Nothing too much there. My girlfriend ran into LSU gymnastics star Haley Bryant at the nail salon a couple days ago and said she was very nice. So that's kind of cool. She's like our all-star, like number one in the country.
Right? And it's not the girl that's making more than anybody else on like
NIL. No, not Livy Dunn. She's the star kind of off the field.
Right. Funny enough. All right. Well, thank you for that tidbit, Daniel. That'll do it for us here on Talking Takes. Tune in next week. We'll have some more basketball and baseball news and obviously gymnastics. So until then, stay safe, stay tuned, have a great week leading up to Easter, and we will talk to you next time right here on Talking Takes.